Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. I'm your host, Greg, and we have a full slate to talk about today. No, that's a lie. We have two cup games that there's really not a whole lot to talk about. But we're here anyway, and now that I've gotten you properly hyped up, I'm going to introduce you to our panel of almost experts. Unfortunately, Ben Daniels couldn't be here with us today. He is busy making bread. But we have the rest of our regulars with us. Leading us off, we have noted internet terrorist Reno Wallabout. Rob, how's it going?
It's going good. Undefeated since our last podcast.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling. It's a nice feeling.
You're welcome.
What part of your apartment are you sitting on the floor of tonight?
I'm sitting at the table like a grown up.
Like a grown up,
a reasonable facsimile of an adult.
Well, yeah. You know, at least who doesn't rend their garments over a soccer team's matches. So that's nice.
Right. I may end up on the floor by the time we're done.
Well, we are talking about Tottenham. It's only to be expected. Next up, coming to us from the slopes of Florida, it's Brian Ashlock. Brian, how are you doing tonight?
Great. Sunny and warm down here. So, you know, it's just another day in paradise.
How's life in the legal profession? Just another day of paradise?
No, not that, no. But, you know, I have a whole room in my house in which I can podcast in, and there's no radiator noises in here, so I think I'm doing all right.
Are you on the floor of that room, or are you...
There's so much crap in here, I don't think I could sit on the floor if I wanted to. So, but no, I have a desk.
And so you're not making carpet angels?
No.
Rob doesn't have a carpet, so he can't make carpet angels, but he can make hardwood floor angels, mouse dropping angels, Rob.
Dust angels.
There we go.
New York City.
Well, yes. So we have moving on from this thrilling conversation, we have some very exciting games to talk about. Let's lead off with our incredibly extensive win again in the FA Cup this past weekend. Rob, what is your biggest takeaway from this match?
We can beat League One opponents, League Two opponents. We can trash the ninth place team from League Two with basically our starting lineup, but not really. Fernando Llorente's star turn was more than enough. And also, we're a bunch of assholes. So we put Harry Kane.
Well, I actually think Poch's explanation is we put Kane on as sort of an exhibition for the Tranmere fans, which fair enough.
Because the actual game wasn't competitive enough for them.
Well,
we could trot out our celebrity.
This was a change of pace in that it took us a little bit to get going, but we really thrashed the shit out of Tranmere, right? I mean, 7-0 ain't bad, and even when we have comfortable wins in these sort of early round FA Cup matches, it always feels like 3 or 4 goals, which isn't to say that's not comfortable, but I mean, we really put the screws to them in a way that I'm not entirely used to, right?
Well, it wasn't exactly the air raid offense, but once that ball got rolling downhill, they folded like a cheap suit pretty fast. It's funny when you see in the Premier League, the difference in skill level between the average player is not that noticeable, except for, you know, guys who are really at the top. But when you have guys like Heung-Min Son and Dele Alli and Harry Kane next to League Two journeymen, it's really kind of scary how good these players are. And there was a little bit of that, especially near the end. We just kind of took them behind the woodshed a little bit. Which is nice to see.
You certainly don't do it often enough. Brian, is this Llorente's finest performance in his Spurs shirt?
I mean, he's great in the FA Cup, so I can't honestly think of many more goals that he's scored ever. So Probably.
He did try to fight the entire West Ham team that one time.
That's true. He did try to fight all of West Ham. So, I mean, I think those are your two options when trying to decide what his best performance is. He scored three goals. None of them were particularly good or impressive, but, like, he scored three goals. Serge Aurier scored two goals. I don't think that was like Serge Aurier's best performance in a Spurs shirt, but he hasn't scored many more goals than that for Spurs either. So, you know, whatever. I'm kind of like Rob. You know, once the ball got rolling and we got really going in the second half, scored six goals. It was kind of a beatdown, and it's nice to not even have the potential of a cup set sort of. Just take care of business, thrash a lower league team, and then get moved on to the next round.
You know who did have trouble with the cup set was Liverpool Football Club. Is it a big deal that Liverpool's already out of this competition, Brian?
It's not that big of a deal. I think, you know, when you're drawn against another Premier League team and you play a fairly rotated side. I mean, you're playing Dejan Lovren and a few of the guys that are sort of more fringy. Then a result like that's to be expected. Wolves are really good in a knockout competition. I'm sure Wolves are going to be very good because they don't concede a lot of goals. They're very compact, and they have skilled players that can move the ball in transition and on the counter. So, it's not a surprising result. And in terms of what it means for the competition overall, you've still got Manchester City, you've still got Chelsea, you've still got United, you've still got Arsenal.
Arsenal, United, one of those teams is going to eliminate the other in the next round.
Right. You've still got most of the top six in, and then after the next round you'll have, assuming no further upsets, four of the top six in the – what will it be? It'll be the round of – 16 after the next one, or it will be I think it'll be the round of 16 after the next round of fixtures. So, you know, four of a quarter of the next group will be, you know, the top sides in our division. That sounds about right to me. It's not as big a deal because, like I said, City are still in it, and it's probably City's competition to lose. But
Nice if they could. I mean, they're playing Burnley in the next round, and I mean, admittedly, that's a more I don't know. I mean, City's probably going to put seven past them, but, you know, at least it's not like Burton or whoever the hell they're playing in the League Cup.
Yeah, I mean that draw is real disappointing. But, I mean, we got drawn against Crystal Palace. We just barely avoided United or Arsenal, so that was nice. It would have been real annoying to have to, like, go to the Emirates for another cup fixture. I think Crystal Palace is going to be a tough match for us, but it should be one that we should win.
Rob, are you feeling the magic of the cup?
I always feel the magic of the cup. I'm so glad Liverpool are out because we would have had to play them.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised we still didn't find a way to draw them.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, if you ever play Football Manager or FIFA for that matter, like, in a cup you always get matched up against Manchester United or Liverpool. So I was ready for it, but I'm glad Liverpool decided to do us a favor.
Not today, Satan.
Crash out and then pretend that it was because they didn't care, because they got bigger fish to fry, which is fine, whatever. Klopp, somebody wrote a headline that said, like, Cup failure, Jurgen Klopp misses again, which
just
I thought
facts.
Was a,
just facts.
A great troll.
Only facts here.
You didn't even get into the final this time before losing. I just like watching games, so I'm glad that we're still in.
Really?
These cups.
When did that start?
Well, I don't enjoy actually watching them, but
you like the idea of it, right?
I like the idea of them playing matches. That's fun. And being in cups is good. And in the FA Cup, you know, there are some games they could win for a while. So it's fun to watch. What's interesting is that there's basically no like B team that we can throw out for cup games this season because we only
have. So we're done with our transfer window.
Well, yeah, since we're not getting anybody named new players, it's basically one lineup that has to play every game. So there aren't really any surprises. We're not going to end up with a 16-year-old center back like Liverpool did.
So yeah. Go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to say, you know, look, we're still on for the FA Cup, League Cup, Champions League treble. So I think that's a really important aim for the second half of the season is, you know, winning all three of those trophies and proving that we are actually the greatest football club, rather than Liverpool or Manchester City. So, you know, the Premier League's not really that important. It's all those other things.
I think it's definitely nailed on. Definitely nailed on.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we're already in the semifinal of the League Cup. So you're welcome for that transition.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Does it make it more difficult if I acknowledge the transition that I provided
yes,
you?
Yes, actually.
That's weird.
So, yeah, let's talk about the League Cup semifinal. We played it on Tuesday afternoon, or evening, I suppose, in England. Tuesday evening against Chelsea, and we came away 1-0 victors off the back of a Harry Kane penalty, thanks to the magic of television sets. It was this was a really strange game, and we were talking about it a little bit in the pre-show. And Rob, you made a really interesting point. This is the most like low-key Chelsea game in years, particularly the most low-key victory against Chelsea in years. Maybe that's a product of the fact that we have another leg to go, so it's really just half a game in a weird way, but this was very subdued for a not super uncomfortable win against Chelsea, right?
Yeah, and there wasn't even really any violence until the game was already over. And Danny Rose decided to swing his hand
and Eric Lamella.
Well, okay. I don't consider that violence.
Getting the Eric Lamella Lamello card.
Again, like the most low-key Eric Lamella yellow card of the season, too.
Yeah, it was just like, I mean, for a game where, for two teams that like basically tried to murder each other like 2 or 3 years ago, this was just, for a semifinal, this was very subdued. First of all, this is the problem with two-legged semifinals. Like, fucking elimination games, please. But, I don't know, God, this was just such a dull game. I mean, dull might not even be the right word. Just like, I don't know, it felt like we could have been playing United or something.
It was a really dull game, but usually, like, the hatred is enough to get you pumped up for it anyway, despite what's actually happening. But I do think it's the two-legged tie thing, like knowing that there's just another game after this one, so you couldn't really get into it. But I don't know.
Do you think we're going to be cranked up for the next one?
I think we're definitely going to be cranked up for the next one because it's at Stamford Bridge and it's going to be a lot harder. And it is elimination, so there's definitely going to be more violence. Which is good and is, you know, probably in our favor, but the stakes will be a little bit higher. So I feel like there'll be a little bit more emotion in it, but yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's kind of been a running theme in recent pods talking about Chelsea and how that's the rivalry is more so than Arsenal. But
I mean, I certainly felt more cranked up for the Arsenal League Cup match.
Yeah, definitely.
And I certainly felt like Spurs fans were more cranked up for that match.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know, man. It's just there's so much going on, and then coming off the FA Cup game, which was sort of low key despite the score. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I can't really put my finger on it, but I was. And I mean, maybe it was the game itself and like getting the goal and then having to hold on for dear life.
It didn't even, I mean, I know we were, but, like, Chelsea were pressuring us, but it didn't, I don't know, like, it didn't feel like one of those games, you know? Like, I don't even feel like Chelsea was all that.
No, they didn't seem all that interested in trying to get a goal.
Well, it was super weird because you had both teams mostly playing their first choice 11s. I mean, you've got Hudson-Odoi in for Chelsea, and you've got, you know, Gazzaniga in for Spurs, but otherwise, that's the first teams for both these teams. And it was kind of boring and bad. Like, nobody really got any shots in the box. You know, I think Spurs XG after the match was something like 0.3. plus the penalty. So, I mean, like, nobody was creating anything. No one was getting forward. It was a really, really weird game. And it was especially weird because we were kind of trying to control the game and sit back, and we were doing that with our Sissoko and Winks midfield, which just seems inadvisable. I kind of felt like we were lucky that Chelsea were so disjointed in attack and were just all around pretty blah about the whole game. Because, I mean, I certainly felt like we were shaky through the midfield, and, you know, and Kieran Trippier wasn't able to do much on his side of the field because Willian was playing him really tight. And we were just like, we weren't bad, but Chelsea wasn't punishing us for our obvious weaknesses.
I think we were kind of bad.
I mean, I just,
but like, Chelsea were definitely not taking advantage.
But it seemed like both teams just weren't engaged in this match. Like, more so than like being bad. That was my
big takeaway
from it.
I feel like on Tottenham's end, it wasn't so much not being engaged as not being like being able to engage in ways that they should, like not being able to win the ball or not being able to complete three straight passes after you do win the ball. And then Chelsea put a lot of pressure, but didn't have anybody in the box. I mean, there was that play where they had someone make the Olivier Giroud run to the near post, and it was Conte, and he was the only one in the box.
Yeah, it's just Chelsea's attacking patterns with Hazard as the striker slash false nine slash whatever they're playing him as are just so weird. And neither of the attacking midfielders were making runs into the box. Ross Barkley doesn't make runs into the box. They weren't challenging Spurs in any sort of way. And so it makes me wonder what they're going to do and how they're going to approach the leg at Stamford Bridge, because obviously they're going to have to attack more. But if they are still going to be in the midst of this Eden Hazard as striker experiment,
well, they might have a striker by then.
Maybe, who knows? Maybe they'll have one. I don't know that the next leg is going to be that much more compelling, other than, like you said, there is a higher potential for violence.
And have sort of figured out some of their attacking issues then, although it does make you wonder why they went the entire game without actually making an adjustment to what they were doing.
But, I mean, they bring on Giroud at a certain point, and even that didn't really change much, nor did bringing on Pedro.
Because they took off what's the kid?
Hudson-Odoi.
They took off Hudson-Odoi at the same time that they brought on Giroud, which didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
I mean, he hadn't been that great. But, I mean, you know, we're talking a lot about Chelsea, and we should probably be talking about Spurs, because I guess this is a Spurs podcast. But, like, we weren't doing a lot either, which I found to be particularly annoying. Like, we tried to play some balls over the top in the first, you know,
14, well, it was pretty effective for the first 15-20 minutes. I mean, and then, you know, it felt like we got our goal. It was like, all right, fucking everybody chill out.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess we can spend some time like talking about the Kane goal and like whether he was offside or not.
Oh yeah, that is the one. That's actually the one bit of Chelsea Spurs interaction that was up to par this game. Lots of bitter Chelsea fans arguing online, you know, with Kevin Costner in a New Orleans courtroom that Harry Kane was in fact offside, and look at this image, which clearly shows it. It was very funny, and I really enjoy it. Now, frankly, I hope he was actually offsides, because it's way funnier that way. But
I mean, the camera angle that they had for the shot to look at the offsides is bad. Like, it's ahead of the play looking back, and so Kane looks like close to being offside. Like, he's leaning, like maybe. I think the thing with it is it was called offside on the field initially. And to me, to go back and then overturn it, I think the way VAR works in the FA Cup is that it has to be a clear and obvious error. And I don't know that what you saw on the video was super clear and obvious. So, like, I understand Chelsea fans' beef, but
fuck,
we got a penalty and we've scored, so I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, we have gotten jobbed in league, well, in cup competitions against Chelsea so often that, you know, who gives a shit?
Like, VAR is VAR.
I mean, my favorite takes, though, are the ones who are like, oh, that's not a penalty. And I'm like, no, that's definitely – we can argue about the offsides. Like, that's fine. I'm happy to listen to those arguments. But there is no doubt that Kepa clearing
that is, like, extremely a penalty. Like, I'm not sure. My favorite was this thing about look at his body shape as he goes down. It's like, yeah, he looks like a man whose leg just got hit by another man.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, that touch carries him away from goal, and he's never going to get to that ball. And it's like, yeah, but he cleared him out. Like, that's – I mean, come on.
I mean, so speaking of keepers, let's switch to the other side of the field. How do you guys feel about our resident third-choice keeper? How do you feel about Gazinga's performance, Rob? Were you impressed by him? Was it better than what we're used to?
Do we really have to do this? Okay, we can do this.
My God, come on, Eeyore. You could talk about him for a little bit.
He's a tall man, and that
saved us a goal, didn't it?
Full. Yes, a tall man with terrible footwork who makes up for it by being tall. He can't catch, apparently, which is, you know, didn't cause any problems in that game.
You're not going to have a problem with that when he makes Nelson Muntz walk down the street with his pants around his legs during our victory parade.
He's fine. He had a good game. His kicking was terrible, but he did make some good saves. And the backpedaling save on the Danny Rose deflection it's a good thing that he's 6'5" or 6'6" or whatever he is. So we'll take it. He's better than Vorm. I think everyone will agree on that. This, you know, most Tottenham fans kind of hated Vorm, so.
Yeah, speaking as a tall man with poor footwork, I think Gazzaniga is great. I am at least not terrified every time the opposition has a set piece with him, which is what I was during the Michel Vorm as number
although
two.
Although weirdly, he is also terrible at dealing with crosses.
Yep, he
getting
is
getting off his line.
He is, but theoretically, he could be better. So, because Vorm is like, I don't know, they say 6'1". He's probably like 5'10".
Well, his arms are very short.
Yeah. So, you know, at least I have confidence that if Gazzaniga needed to, he could maybe punch a ball away at some point. You're right that his kicking was really bad, which I thought was weird because his distribution against Arsenal was really good and was what led to a couple of the goals in that game. So he seems kind of hit or miss on that, which is, you know, fine because Hugo Lloris's distribution is awful anyway. So it's not like he's that much of a drop off.
Right. We're so conditioned to think that the keeper can't get the ball up to midfield.
Yeah.
Without giving it straight to the other team. So, I don't know. Yeah, his distribution in this game was really poor. But at least you know that he can kick the ball 10 yards into the opposing team's half, unlike Hugo. So, worst comes to worst, he can clear it out. I think all of those criticisms aside, he actually played really well. So, we should be happy about that.
I don't think he's had a game so far this season where he's played particularly poorly.
But I think the thing with him that is concerning is, and maybe it just comes from having Hugo, who initially started as an insane sweeper keeper and is now not quite that, but still, you know, is confident everywhere in the box. He just doesn't seem to command, like, he's big and tall and a good shot stopper, but I don't feel like he commands his area like in the way that I would like a keeper to.
No, and if you watched his interactions with his defenders, they did a lot of screaming and pointing at him. Like, pass it that way, come off your line, no, don't do that. Which, you know, is fine. It probably takes a while for a keeper and his defense to sort of get used to playing with each other, and he hasn't really played that much. But,
and I mean, not even hasn't played that much for Spurs, just in life hasn't played that much.
He was a third string keeper for several years, which means he never played. But yeah, the thing you remember about a keeper, and usually what people use to decide whether or not a keeper is good, is whether they let in goals. So as long as his shot stopping is pretty good, I feel like most people can kind of hand wave away the other stuff. If he like commits a total howler, that's what people are going to remember, versus kicking it out of bounds a couple of times.
Yeah, I think as a backup keeper, he's fine. I think, you know, in an ideal world, you'd either want someone who is a more experienced veteran or who is a young up and comer. And Gazzaniga is neither of those things.
He's who is, you know, English.
Right, yeah, or someone who is English. Preferably someone who is English and is one of those two things.
Yeah, like not Joe Hart.
No. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, so... But I think, you know, if he's our cup goalkeeper, that's fine, I guess. I really did think it was interesting that we played him in the semifinal, because I felt like that's come back and kind of bitten us in the ass in previous years, and I wasn't sure that Pochettino would commit to doing that. And so I'll be interested to see if he does it again at Stamford Bridge, and then, you know, if we progress, if he does it at Wembley for the final. Like, is this just Gazzaniga's thing, or is Pochettino going to at some point be like, all right, no, I need to win a trophy, so we're going, you know, full first team 11?
I have a feeling it'll be him again for the second leg, but if we're in the final, I mean, you want to win a trophy, you're probably going to start.
I have a feeling he's not going to start Lloris at the final, like, if we make it there. I don't know. I would hope that he doesn't, but who knows?
I don't know. That's pretty ballsy thing to do on your way out.
I mean, Lloris did win the last cup final he started, so he also had like a horrible error in it, but that's really neither here nor there.
That all worked out for him.
Yeah, they were already up like, what was it, 4-1 or 3-1 or something at the time.
So those were the only games since our last podcast. There hasn't been a lot of transfer news, but we wanted to take some of the transfer news that we did have this past week to take the time to honor one of Tottenham's most important players. Because depending on who you believe, it looks like Moussa Dembele might be leaving Tottenham for greener fields in Beijing soon. Moussa has been tied very closely with the move to the Chinese Super League. More recent reports have been throwing a little bit of cold water on this, but I think none of us would be really shocked if he leaves in this transfer window. So I wanted to spend a little time looking back on just sort of the greatness of Moussa Dembele. We bought him way back during the AVB year, which is like 7 years ago at this point, which is fairly insane. It's, I think we all expected a good, solid midfielder when we bought him and not, I don't know, one of the most unique players in world football. Brian, why is Moussa Dembele such a good player? What has made him such a unique and valuable part of Tottenham during his time here?
Well, I mean, look, if you're a Spurs fan, you don't need us to tell you why, but I mean...
Oh, well, then, never mind. Good night, everybody. No,
but I mean, I'm just saying, like, if you saw him play and you were a Spurs fan... his skill set was obvious. He was the
I think that's the wrong way to describe it, though, because I think it really took a while for Dembele to find a coach who knew how to use him.
The question, answered or not?
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, but I think he was the ultimate midfielder in terms of controlling the game and progressing the ball. And you know, Michael Cayley had a tweet earlier this week that, you know, it showed dribble success and number of take-ons in a game. And Moussa Dembele, I almost called him Moussa Sissoko, I'm sorry.
One great player sounds like another.
Right. And Moussa Dembele is just head and shoulders above every midfielder in that data set. And, I mean, he's completing four dribbles a game and at a success rate that is significantly higher than any other player in the data set. And that's really what he was. Moussa Dembele was Tottenham Hotspur's ball progressor in an era where we were transitioning away from the creative deep passing of Luka Modric and trying to figure out how, as a team, we could still move the ball around and be an effective attacking team while not having a great creative playmaker who was playing deeper up the field. And Dembele, who had been basically an attacking midfielder, who had been a striker in Holland and then moved to being more of a attacking midfielder at Fulham before he kept getting moved further and further back. And, I mean, he was just absolutely amazing. The calm that he had on the ball. He would get the ball, you know, receive the ball in our defensive third from like a defender and with his back to the goal we were attacking, and he would make, you know, these sublime turns and spins to get out of pressure from the opposition and just breeze upfield. And I think that was the thing about Moussa Dembele that always struck me, was that it was so easy and effortless. He never really looked like he was going all out. He never like got above like a nice jog. He wasn't sprinting all over the place. He was just, you know, just glided around the field. And I think, you know, one of the things that tells you how good of a player he is that I think probably for the last 4 or 5 years, anytime you see another Tottenham Hotspur player interviewed and they're asked, all right, who's the best player at Spurs? Who's the player that you don't want to come up against in training? Who is, you know, the best guy you've ever played with? To a man, they all say Moussa Dembele. And, you know, that has to mean something. Like, I cannot think of any better midfielders at doing what he did in this, you know, in the last 5-6 years.
So why do you think it took so long for them to find a role for him, or so long in his career? Is it because that sort of ball progression is just not common?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. I mean, you know, like I said, he started as a striker and then became kind of an attacking midfielder, and he just doesn't score goals. And, you know, for you know, whatever his ability on the ball is, he's not an amazing passer. He's a good and consistent passer. He's not like Moussa Sissoko, but he's not making, you know, penetrating through balls or like dangerous switches of play. He's making good, smart, consistent passes. And what he does is he breaks the press by dribbling. And yeah, I just don't think that at the time he was, you know, when he was bouncing around between positions, that people had the people weren't thinking that that was the most effective way to deal with pressure. We were kind of still in the sort of Barcelona tiki-taka, one touch, move the ball on. That's sort of the way that you beat pressure, is one touch football. The midfielders exchanging quick passes with the wingers and then making runs forward and then da 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 da. And that was how, you know, we were conditioned to believe that you were supposed to progress the ball. And then you would have one playmaker either in an advanced role or in a deep role who was spraying passes all over the place, playing those incisive through balls and breaking the lines. And what Moussa Dembele did that, you know, I would say very few other people did, or at least very few other people did successfully, was use his dribbling ability and his sheer ability to hold on to the ball and not be dispossessed to break the lines in a similar way. And there weren't any players other than wingers who were doing that sort of thing.
Rob, we talk about how unique Dembele is. I mean, how important was he to sort of Pochettino Spurs? Because he really took off when he found a role for him in the team. And I don't think it was a coincidence we struggled a bit as Dembele went in and out of the team in his first year. How vital was Dembele to what Pochettino has accomplished at Tottenham?
Well, I think having a guy who is completely press resistant, in a system where you're controlling the game, you're controlling the ball, you're grinding teams out, you're waiting for them to make mistakes. When you have the ball, you need to be totally press resistant yourself. And he's just, you can't get the ball off of him when he's healthy. And like, first of all, that past tense stuff from Brian, that was just wild. Like, that feels so crazy. So I'm going to use the present tense, even though we might never see him play for Tottenham again. Having him, because the other midfield options for the past few years have their own sort of limitations in terms of their passing, in terms of their own press resistance. So having Dembele as the sort of safety blanket, knowing that if you're in trouble, no matter how many guys you have on you, no matter how compressed the midfield is, you give him the ball and he'll wiggle his way out of it. And then suddenly you can go again and you can attack and you can move forward and you can move players into space because you know that he's going to get through 1, 2, 3, 4 defenders and suddenly there's space open for you. So I just think it was invaluable. And Dembele, when he was not at full strength, the team would kind of sputter and stutter a little bit. And without him at all, it's really a testament to Pochettino in how he's had to completely rejigger the way that the system works to begin with to compensate for not having that safety net in the middle of the field. And I mean, now you kind of see them just avoid the middle entirely as much as they can. But I just want to take a second also, throwing out all of the stats, throwing out all of the tactical stuff, just from an aesthetic point of view, there are a few plays in football more beautiful than Moussa Dembele dancing past defenders. He doesn't do it at full speed. Most of the time they know it's coming, and he just glides past people. And it's one of those rare things where you don't even care what it means in the context of the game. It's just such a beautiful thing to watch. And I'm really going to miss that.
And the other thing about his game is that he was an underrated bastard. Like, I mean, we all know the eye gouging.
Tell that to Diego Costa.
Yeah. Like, look, we all know about the eye gouging incident, but there's also trying to kick the ever loving shit out of Sergio Ramos. Other, like, you know, nasty, like when he makes that smooth turn and moves away from a player where he's thrown an elbow at somebody's face, or, you know, like he of a player that sort of really initially embraced Pochettino's sort of aesthetic of beautiful football and then also sort of assholes. And it really, really was, he so long was kind of the embodiment of the team. And it's, you know, it's kind of sad looking back on it that we spent a couple of seasons, maybe at least 2 seasons, wasting him, where he was playing the more defensive of the midfielders in a pairing with Scott Parker, or of the in a pairing with Ryan Mason, or there was that Pochettino season where he didn't really use him at all and kind of like farmed him out onto the wing every once in a while. And it's just like he could have been so much more and so much more appreciated for his skill set if we hadn't spent those few years being like, oh, I don't know, he just holds onto the ball, I guess.
Well, it's worth remembering in Pochettino's first year that, I mean, he rage subbed him and left him on the bench for quite a while. And I know we were all convinced when we talked about it at the time, and I know that this like drove us nuts, but we were all convinced Dembele was going to get sold. And it's just wild to think we were that close to, you know, Dembele probably just being the sort of weird player that we had, who we sort of appreciate, much closer to like a Sandro than what he ended up being. But he really had those 2 periods, like you said. It was like that year he had with Sandro where he was excellent in a semi-different way.
and then sort of the way Pochettino figured out how to use him. And you're right, it's in between that there's that interregnum where AVB and then Pochettino just didn't know what the fuck to do with him.
And it's weird because looking at it now, it's so obvious what you do with him. And it's that you put him in there and you allow him to control games in the midfield. You know, you allow him to soak up pressure. You allow him to break up play. You allow him to just get on the ball and move your team up the field. And for the longest time, we were like, oh, I guess he's a defensive midfielder because he doesn't score goals or have assists. So he can't be, you know, the more attacking of the midfield too. So I don't know. It's just we could have been doing so much more with him.
When you have a guy who is better than basically anyone else in the world at one particular thing, you can sort of spend your time preoccupied with the things that he can't really do, or you can figure out a way to maximize that thing that he does so well. And I guess, I mean, the fact that he was a striker shows you that a lot of his coaches looked at him and thought about all the things that he should be doing and slowly realized that it's just not his game.
You know, and I think that's one of the weird things that he doesn't, you know, he will get knocked on is people will say, oh, he didn't have assists or, oh, he didn't have goals and he can't have been that good if he didn't do those things. And it's just like that to me just indicates that you just never watched him play and didn't see the difference that he made to the team either when he came on or when he, how the team was different when he came off. You know, so many times, especially last season, when he was, you know, only kind of fit and he would come on late in games and would just settle things down. Like we would be able to control the midfield and we would be able to, you know, just dictate tempo late in games because he was there and he was able to just spread his calmness on the ball to the rest of the team. And that was invaluable. And it's weird now to not have that where you're like late in games and we're like trying to soak up pressure and we're like, what do we do? And then our answer is to bring on Oliver Skip. And it's just like, oh, that's not the same at all, is it?
Rob, do you think, let's assume for the sake of argument, we don't sell him or he just leaves on a free in the summer. Do you think he has, do you think he would be a contributor to the Spurs for the rest of the season, given his health and what's going on with his injuries?
I mean, if we could manage him in the way that, like Brian was just saying, he's the last 30-minute closer.
You think he's? I guess what I'm asking is, do you think he has the ability to contribute that, given what his injuries are this year?
I mean, I don't. There's no really, but yeah, I think, I mean, you could get something out of him, even if you just wheeled him out for really big games, as long as you could keep him at a certain level of fitness in between matches. You know, maybe he'd be like Ledley King was at the end where he didn't even train during the week and then you'd roll him out on Saturday. Yeah, we could certainly use him, especially if we're not signing anybody in the January transfer window. But maybe this, you know, maybe this is the time for him to go if he's ready, if he doesn't feel like his body can hold up. If he's doesn't have it in him to do the rehab and the Pochettino conditioning and the hard training and playing games in England. Maybe it's time for him to hang him up here, but I think he'd absolutely find a spot for him.
So, out of curiosity, where do you guys think that he will wind up being? Assuming he never plays another game for Spurs, where does he wind up being in like the modern era Spurs pantheon? Like, is he, you know, is he talked about in the same breath as Modric, Bale, and, you know, Kane and King and those guys, or is he a step below? Is he even in the conversation?
I think he's going to be like he did too much here to be a weird cult player, but I think he's going to be one of those guys that like Spurs fans don't shut up about and other teams fans, especially the further out we get from it, don't quite get.
like in a general level, like I think you read like stat heads or whatever, like love Moussa Dembélé and, you know, definitely understand his value. But I think he's going to be one of those guys that just Spurs fans, you know, he's just going to be like a cult hero for Spurs fans, and other teams just aren't going to, other teams fans are just going to wonder why we talk about Moussa Dembélé so much.
I think that's right. I think somebody on Twitter made the comparison that he's probably going to end up like Berbatov in the minds of Spurs fans, where it's just like everyone remembers how cool he was and how good he was.
But yeah, but no one seems to remember it like Spurs fans.
Right. He's not going to, I don't think he's at that level of like club legend in terms of what he contributed. But I mean, anyone of our generation will remember how good he was.
It's interesting because I think, you know, obviously he's going to go like mine Bitcoins in the basement of like ancient Belgian hotels, but he's always going to be, I think, associated with Spurs before he's associated with any other club. Between the fact that obviously his most high profile successful years were with us and we were the team that sort of figured out the best way to use him.
Well, and Tommy wins three Scudetto with Juventus in 3 years.
Well, I guess, but
I mean, he's also made more appearances for us than he has for any other club. I mean, he played almost 250 times for Spurs. Like, you know, he had three seasons at Fulham, or two, and then a couple games at Fulham. So,
but he doesn't have like a Belgian. He doesn't have a club in like Belgium or the Netherlands in the way that like Vertonghen and Alderweireld. I think they're always going to have a very heavy. Like when Vertonghen retires, I think he's going to be probably Tottenham is going to be one of the first clubs mentioned with him, but the other's probably going to be Ajax is going to be close behind, if not ahead of us. Like I think Dembélé at Spurs with a bullet. I mean, anyone you think of Dembélé, you're going to think of Tottenham, and I don't know. I think that's pretty cool because he was a very important player for us, and it's just strange because in a very different way, he's a lot like Modric, and you just can't replace him. You're not going to find another guy with that skill set. And it's going to make replacing that Dembélé sized hole in our midfield weird because we can't just go get another Dembélé.
There is no other Dembélé.
No, there isn't. I mean, more so than even like, you know, there's other Modrics. They're not as good as Modric, but they do the same sort of things. But, you know, there's no other Dembélé. You've got to completely rethink how you're going to run your midfield now.
I mean, there are literally other Moussa Dembélés, but they're not.
Yes, you're right. There are actually, in fact, there is only one Moussa Dembélé, but there are, in fact, also multiple Moussa Dembélés. So.
Yeah. There's one that plays for, I don't know, he's in France now. Is it Lyon?
But they don't do Moussa Dembélé things.
Well, right. I mean, I'm sure that they feel that
they do, but they
don't.
They're like, they're like bad photocopies.
Brian, what do you think Dembélé's legacy is going to be at Tottenham?
You know, I think because we are of the generation, I think he will always be one of the players that I associate with like the most successful period in Spurs history. In modern history. Sorry. So I obviously will always think of him significantly more highly than some of the other players from this time period. But I think you guys are right. I think he's done too much and has been recognized by too many as being good to be kind of like a weird cult favorite. You know, like someone who would be like, I don't know, like
Lamella.
A Pavlyuchenko.
Like Lamella's probably going to be.
Lamella or an Aaron Lennon or something like that. Or Benoit Assouakoto. But he hasn't done, you know, he's not a global superstar on the level that a Harry Kane or a Luka Modric or a Gareth Bale were. So he's probably going to occupy that weird in-between space where you're like, oh yeah, he was good. In the same way that I think a lot of these players will, like Jan Vertonghen, Hugo Lloris will probably be in that same kind of area too. So I don't know.
To some degree, I think it does. It will depend on what the team does over the next few years.
I think if
this ends up being one of the more successful periods in the club's history, I think people will definitely remember a lot more of these players than if.
And also,
you know, we go on to win a lot of trophies.
How much are we going to be able to replace him in midfield? I mean, I sometimes wonder, as much as we all love Berbatov, and there's a lot of reasons to love Berbatov, how much did his legend grow by the fact that we really didn't have another really fucking good striker until Harry Kane rolled around. I mean, you know, there was a real void at that position that we tried to fill in a lot of different ways to middling success, you know. And I think that's a bit of a reason that, you know, sort of Berbatov was so fondly remembered at Spurs, that we had such a hard time replacing him. And, you know,
also, he was just really fucking cool in a way that Dembele isn't.
He was. Dembele's extremely handsome in a way that no one else on this team is. So,
okay, yeah, Dembele's handsome, but he's also a Bitcoin miner. And, you know, he's kind of a, like, you know, he's best friends with Jan Vertonghen, whose mom drives him to practice. So, you know, it's not like he doesn't have a lot of color to his life, you know?
I mean, you're right, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. I think a lot's going to depend on how we replace him. If our midfield looks like this for the next 3 or 4 years, then I think Dembele is going to like occupy a much larger space in the collective consciousness of Spurs fans than he might if we find someone good in the next year or two.
I think it's fair.
So let's wrap this conversation up. Rob, what is your favorite Moussa Dembele memory? If you think, when you think of Moussa Dembele, what do you think of?
Oh my God! You want me to pick just one?
Come on. There's got to be something. Like, what do you think of Dembele?
I mean, it's eye gouging Diego Costa, really. Let's be honest. It's kicking Sergio Ramos. It's definitely kicking Sergio Ramos.
It's a foul, really?
I'm just gonna go with that. Just like, because I mean, you wouldn't expect him to be that guy, but he was like, man, I want to be the one to do it. Yeah, I'm going with that. Forget all of his actual soccer playing. It's definitely the violence.
Rob, or Brian.
I mean, the violence stands out because the thing about Dembele is I can't really think of many fixtures where he was just amazing. Like, not that he wasn't ever amazing, but that he was just so consistently good and his level of play was so consistently high that I can't really recall any games where you're like, oh wow, like that was the quintessential Moussa Dembele performance. I guess if I had to pick one, there's been a couple matches against Arsenal where he was really good. I want to say it was a couple seasons ago, early in the season, where we drew against Arsenal at the Emirates. And I think after the game, Pochettino calls Dembele like a genius or something and basically says that Dembele is the greatest player he's ever seen on the ball or something to that effect. And that was just one of those games where he was never dispossessed. He dribbled past Arsenal defenders.
He had a really high. He broke Coquelin's ankles.
Yes,
That's got to be up there. That was terrific.
So I think that's one of my favorite memories. But you know, other than like the weird violent stuff, I think it's so hard to pick out moments because, like Rob said earlier, it was just sublime to see him do the turn, blow past somebody, and move up the field. And he did that every fucking game.
And sometimes he would dribble backwards so that he could do it again. Which, until you understood why he was doing that, could drive you crazy. But then you realized it was just to be an asshole.
And then you appreciated it.
And then you appreciated it, and it was wonderful.
I think, weirdly enough for me, the Moussa Dembele moment that stands out the most is a goal. Which is not something he was super well known for at Spurs.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know. It was, I don't know if you remember the Europa League.
There weren't many to choose from. So
well, exactly. It was the Europa League round of 32 against Lyon, where we were like, it was all tied up going into the 89th minute. This would have been, I think, Bale's last year at Spurs. Dempsey was on the team. I remember that. Or at least as I look at this highlight, I could see Dempsey in the celebrations. But it was a 2-2 draw, and I think we were going into the 89th minute, and we were in Lyon, I believe, and Dembele just hits a fucking rocket from the outside the box on the left side and just puts it in the other side of the net. And I think it put us through the round of 16, and we all knew we went on to that kind of glory that year. But it was just like Dembele wasn't a particularly great goal scorer, but occasionally he would just let it fucking rip, and it was always a joy to watch. But that's probably what I think of for him. It was a very dramatic goal. It was a very impressive goal. You know, and it was quintessential Dembele in a way, not in terms of his goal story. It was like, oh, Spurs need something to happen, and here's Moussa Dembele to make it happen. So
it always did seem really weird when he scored a goal. Like something didn't look right about it.
There was some match. I don't remember what it was. I want to say it was a Europa League match. I was talking to Ben during the match, and Dembele had taken, like, he'd put one in row Z or something earlier in the match. And I remember saying to him, just fucking don't let Moussa Dembele shoot it. And, like, the next, like, 30 seconds, he just fucking rifles one from outside the box into the top of the net. Like, or the top right corner or something. And it was just like, oh, of course. Like, that was Dembele. Like, just doing everything possible. He was a hell of a player. I'm going to miss him. I wish he hadn't died in the last few years.
I guess we're all going to have to watch a lot of Chinese soccer.
I guess so. What do you think? Do you think he ends up in China or do you think he ends up in Italy?
I can see, and it's happened to quite a few players. He goes to China for like a year, gets paid just absurd amounts of money.
Or and then doesn't get paid absurd amounts of money.
Well, is promised absurd amounts of money. And then, you know, a year and a half, ends up back in Europe, like in Italy, where I think he would be
fantastic. I mean, it's worked out great for Gervinho, so.
Oh, Gervinho. Yeah, no, I could definitely see him like on Juve in 2 years or Inter or.
Yeah, I would say Inter or Milan because.
I hope he goes
to that direction. I don't think he's got enough fitness for Juve. Like,
I think he's got some pretty old players.
Yeah, but not as injured as he is.
Well, they've got the good juice.
Ah, the Qatari ankle juice.
Yeah, I think they could probably nurse him along for a while. But yeah, I just hope that he doesn't like become one of those guys who goes progressively lower quality leagues and ends up, you know, on the Chicago Fire or something.
I don't know. I would really enjoy watching Moussa Dembele completely own MLS.
He can come play for Inter Miami in 2020.
There you go. You're,
boom.
We've got the head of the Inter Miami supporters group over here. He can arrange.
He'd be great. Him in the MLS would be so stupid.
It would be really fun. I just think he would just fucking annihilate that entire league.
Yes, yes. A league built entirely on fitness and running a lot. I'm sure that'll work out great.
Yeah, but they won't be able to get him off the ball. That's the best part. So just give him the ball, let him dribble it into the net. Like, come on, it's gonna be great.
There you go. If Wayne Rooney can do it, how hard could it be?
Sure.
I mean, Pirlo did it for a couple seasons. It can't be that hard. Well, he was like 45.
Yeah, he didn't do it too well. So
yeah, he didn't even make any tackles or anything. He just kind of stood around and hit and passed the ball.
Well, on that note, Rob, where can people on the internet find you writing about Moussa Dembele?
You can find my Requiem for a Moose blog on Tumblr at Brett Rainbow, or you can find me on Twitter tweeting about Moussa Dembele at Reno Allabout.
Brian, where can people find you on the inner tubes?
I will be tooting on Mastodon.
No, you won't.
Is it still a thing? Is Mastodon still a thing?
I don't know. Ben is trying to make it a thing, I'm sure.
We heard a lot about it for a week and now it's gone, I think.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah, it's weird how that happens in the era of the internet.
Is that the one with all the Nazis?
No, that's the one with all the socialists. Gab is the one with all the Nazis.
Yep. But anyway, I am not on the Nazi one. I'm on the other one.
You're not on either of them.
Tooting at Brett Rainbow, and I am also on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. That's Brian with a Y.
Well, you will not find any of my Moussa Dembele content on Brett Rainbow's Tumblr because they have outlawed pornography, so you can't find it there. But you can find me tweeting about Moussa Dembele on Twitter.com at skipjack0079. For Brian, for Rob, and for Moussa Dembele, and for Brett Rainbow, I am your host, Greg. Thank you very much, and come on, you Spurs.